It was destined to be a major American city, the birthplace of flight, home to major corporations, an industrial hub, even a college town. Dayton sat near the intersection of Interstate 70 and I-75 and looked poised to become a great American city. Then jobs started disappearing and companies moved out. The people who remained were forced to reinvent themselves. Good morning. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Steve Brown sitting in for Ann this week. This hour, we're talking about Dayton and efforts to turn the city around. Later this hour, we'll be joined by the city manager to talk about Welcome Dayton, an effort to boost the city's shrinking population by making it more immigrant-friendly. First, we're joined by two of the key members of Reinvention Stories, a collaborative effort between filmmakers, public radio station WYSO, radio producers, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Nina Lewis is the general manager at WYSO in Yellow Springs. She joins us from the studios there. Welcome to All Sides, Nina.
Hi, thanks. It's actually Nina Ellis.
Did I say Lewis? I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I had Ellis written down. I don't know why I said Lewis.
That's okay. And thanks for having us.
Sure. And Julia Reichert, one of the producers of Reinvention Stories. Welcome, Julia.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And listeners, share your stories about Dayton, your story of reinventing yourself maybe after a life-changing event, how you fared. Maybe you're still adjusting. Call us, 614-292-8513. Again, 614-292-8513. You can also email allsides at WOSU.org, find the show on Facebook, or tweet at WOSU All Sides. And this project really is about storytelling at its heart. ReinventionStories.org it's an interactive website based largely around the documentary about seven Dayton residents trying to reinvent themselves. We have a construction worker, a woman dealing with the loss of her son, people laid off from their jobs. To really bring our listeners in, let's start with a piece of sound, a story about one of those people who lost her job, a woman named Latoya. And the first act of the documentary starts with her talking about her struggles.
Me and my fiance, we have six kids all together. We did odd jobs, and then the older kids, they got jobs and helped out. We cleaned office buildings, houses, did yards. We did everything, you hear me? Everything. And we just stayed strong and stuck together.
Stay strong and stuck together. Julia Reichert, the producer on the project, that seems to be a common theme for the documentary project. How did you find Latoya and the others featured?
You know, that's a great question. We decided on an interesting, unusual maybe for radio strategy, which was we decided to choose some target neighborhoods in Dayton. We chose four, and they were pretty diverse all over the city. And we decided to literally walk the streets, a team of us. There were probably as many as 15 of us all through last summer. So we walked the streets, and we had in our little backpack a little tape recorder and a camera, and we would meet people walking their dogs, sitting on their porch, which people love to do in the summers in Dayton, Ohio, unloading groceries from their car, playing with their kids in the park. We met Latoya on her porch in Residence Park, and we, you know, had a nice chat with her on the porch that very day, and then we followed her story over time, and gradually she got to trust us more. I mean, you hear the beginning of it just there, but what, as you get into, you know, the piece is, the interactive piece is divided into three acts. That's the beginning of Act One. Mm-hmm. She loses her job. Act Two, she actually loses her home, and she and her family end up living in their car. The story gets much more difficult in Act Two as people really struggle with what to do. And I won't say what happens in Act Three. But that's how we met Latoya, and that's actually how we met most of the people who were in the interactive and many of the people who were in the radio series as well, kind of randomly. I mean, honestly, that was partly because we wanted to see what Dayton felt like. We wanted to get the tone of it, not just sort of drive to a place we'd already planned, get out of the car, get out our tape recorder, but really walk the streets and feel our town again after this huge crisis we had, the crash of 2008.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that Latoya really did obviously trust you. How hard was that, getting these people to trust you? You know, when you're talking to someone who's really down on their luck, someone who might be living in a car, they don't always want to talk about these things.
You know, that's absolutely true. The first time we talked to her, she did not mention, when we met her on the porch, she didn't mention living in the car. She didn't mention the fact that her hair had all fallen out during this time. But as we got to know her more, as we showed we were truly interested and showed up on her porch again a couple months later and took more pictures and got to know her kids. Then she started talking with us about kind of the depths of what had happened. Now, it was all in the past. It had already happened. But Act Three follows what's happening, what happened currently, which was kind of exciting. And that's true for a lot of people, as if you see the interactive piece, you know, the reinventionstories.org interactive piece, you'll see that we follow people over time. And that's what I think makes good documentary is, you know, it can start on the porch, it can start in the park, but it has to become a relationship, which I believe most of these, with most of these folks, we're so enriched by knowing these people much more deeply and how they have struggled to find a new path in life, to start again. Just like our city, honestly, is struggling. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we started, I know Nina and Steve and I talked. We didn't know if Dayton was going to come back. We didn't know if Dayton was coming back. We didn't know what the possibilities were. Now, this is a year ago, a little over a year ago. And now I think we can give an answer, don't you think, Nina, to
what's that way? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love the way Julia talks about we wanted to get a feel mm-hmm. for Dayton because, you know, you can read statistics that mm-hmm. are probably true or, you know, look at the headlines day after day and get a sense, but you don't get a feel like you do when you're in on people's porches and having them, you know, show you their new place of business and seeing the excitement in their eyes and meeting their kids and their dogs and really sort of becoming part of their, having them introduce you to their world. So, yeah, I think that we all would agree that we got a real feel for what's happening. And we feel that people, there's a lot of resilience is the key word that we always talk about. There's so much resilience and so many people striving so hard to reinvent themselves because the path that they chose, you know, earlier in their life became some kind of a dead end for them.
And, you know, there's actually, I mean, we have a few clips to play, and if we could point to another one, there's a, you know, one of the themes, as you mentioned, is resilience, is like, what do you do when it looks like your life is stalled, is stopped? And there's a person, his name is Aronde Clark, who kind of said something during our first interview that really almost is like a theme for the whole piece. Can we hear that little clip? Is that okay?
When you get told no, when you get told you can't, you can't, you can't, you can't. That right there, how you respond to that whole you can't, how you respond to that defines you.
And I feel as though it's true that as an individual, it defines you how you respond to those big hurdles in life and when you're told it's not going to happen. How the city, how a neighborhood responds to crime that's building and building, let's say, to deterioration. How does a neighborhood respond? Do they give up or do they say, okay, this is our neighborhood. What are we going to do? The same with downtown of Dayton. It was looking kind of bad there for a while. And, you know, right, it's... You there's life there. There's life there now in a big way. It's really turned around. So how you respond to that really does define you as an individual or as a neighborhood or as a city.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about the city of Dayton. It's featured in a new documentary project, Reinvention Stories. We're joined by Nina Ellis from public radio station WYSO and producer Julia Reichert. Join the discussion. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. Share your story of reinvention. And the participants really did lay out their stories bare in this project. Now, I want to play for another clip that comes from Act One. Just after LaToya, the woman who we met at the beginning of the show, we meet Jeremy. He's a younger guy, worked in construction his entire adult life, but doesn't see it as a long-term career. So he decides to go a different route with disc golf. We can here he is explaining in the film.
There was really no place around town to buy discs. Used to buy at Renaissance Music. And the guy there was an older guy, and he wasn't friendly. You couldn't touch any of the discs. They were all behind the counter. You'd be like, wow, what does a cheetah do? And he's like, I don't know, it's a frisbee. So you'd buy because the picture on the front was cool. And I thought, you know, we could do this. There's got to be a demand for it. You're not competing with any big box stores.
And so he starts his own business. Again, this is pretty indicative of the reinvention stories featured in the documentary. It's not quite as desperate as LaToya, but it's still a complete reinvention to start a business selling discs for disc golf.
And, you know, I don't know about you, but I had never heard of disc golf. Had you, Nina?
Mm-hmm.
You had heard of it.
Yeah, but I didn't know that Belmont was such a big area for that. Belmont's a neighborhood on the east side of Dayton, and, you know, it's a hub of activity for disc golf. And he saw that opportunity. He was playing disc golf. He knew a lot of people that were doing it. And, you know, he came to this point in his life where he said, I have to take a chance. I have to do something different. And I'm going to go for it. And against all odds, you know, his family was sort of ridiculing him. And but luckily, he got support from his wife who said, you know, go for it. Let's do it.
And, you know, actually his story, if you get to see the interactive site, reinventionstories.org, if you get to see that, you'll see it's interesting. He opened his big store in 08, mm-hmm. right as the economy was crashing. And, you know, more than one person said that crash, as bad as it was, and has had what a terrible impact it had in many ways on the city and on individuals. So many people lost their jobs. But also it opened a door to think about your life in a new way. You know, there were none of those good factory jobs. There was no, you know, great high-tech job at NCR to look forward to if you got a degree. So someone like Jeremy, so he starts a business. What does he find out? Well, it turns out disc golf is one of those family activities that you can do for like $25, $50 investment for a whole year. And so it actually turned out to increase the fact of a depression kind of turned out to increase the possibilities for disc golf for families and couples and individual groups and so forth. And we found that in a few different ways. Some people said, one person says something I think is really, you know, really smart and surprising, is that with, in a way, the captains of industry of Dayton all gone, we don't have anyone to look up to. We don't have a strong kind of class of people who kind of make decisions for everybody because they have the money and the jobs. We don't have those people so much anymore. So that means that people, regular people getting together in groups or in neighborhoods can actually make more of a difference now than they could before. So who knew that was a side effect of the recession?
And how did you
find... Who knows in the long run, but yeah.
How did you find Jeremy?
Oh, Jeremy. Well, Jeremy was in Belmont. There's a, you know, what we decided in that particular neighborhood, since there was a really interesting street called Watervliet, which was on both sides of the street. There were all these individual businesses. There were no big box stores. There were no chain stores. It was like a hardware store owned by an individual, a restaurant owned by an individual, a bar owned by an individual, a hair salon, all individually owned. So we decided, even a gun store, actually, that just opened. I could go on about all the different little individual stores. So we said maybe that should really be our emphasis in that particular neighborhood. So we went up and down the store, the street, you know, gradually by gradually, talking to people, checking it out. And we met Jeremy one day in his store. And he told us this little story about, you know, starting this business in the middle of the recession. And the story I just told you, and we said, well, this is cool. And then we kept going back because we were on that street a lot, and he had kind of an interesting store and a kind of a soulful way of talking. I mean, we really liked, I mean, all the people, I guess in a documentary like this, you have to actually really like your subjects. You have to find them interesting. They have to kind of like you. They have to feel, don't you think, Nina, mm-hmm. they have to feel like when you show up with your tape recorder once again and your camera, that they are like, okay, here's Julia, here's Chandra, here's Steve, here's Nina, whoever, and oh, I'm glad to see them. Yeah, sure, I'll talk to them. If there's not that kind of chemistry,
right,
it often doesn't work.
Yeah. I want to keep talking about this, but we do have to take a break. We're joined by Nina Ellis from public radio station WYSO and radio producer Julia Reichert, two of the key members of a new documentary project, Reinvention Stories. We'll be right back with more. This is All Sides. I'm Steve Brown, and you're listening here on 89.7 NPR News. We're also streaming on the web at WOSU.org/allsides.
Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, we'll look at veterans back from war and waiting way too long for benefits. The price of war delayed and denied. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
On Point this afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us today. It's 37 degrees, cloudy skies, about a 30% chance of a afternoon shower, and a high of 43 today. Partly cloudy for tonight, still a little cold, a low of 29 degrees. Partly cloudy Thursday, and a high of 46. Support comes from Ohio State's Department of Neurology, conducting a planned emergency study to see if progesterone can limit the effects of a traumatic brain injury, or TBI. Details on the PROTECT study, including a community opinion survey and how to opt out of the study, are at protectiii.com. All Sides continues. This is 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Steve Brown, sitting in for Ann this week. This hour, we're talking about Dayton and Reinvention Stories, a project that documented the stories of seven people from the Western Ohio city. You can watch the first two acts of the documentary at reinventionstories.org, and the third act goes live April 9th. And there's also an interactive map that guides you through several stories of hope around the city. Nina Ellis, let's talk a little bit about the interactive map, how that works, and the experience visitors to the website can have when they go to when they go there.
Well, you know, we wanted people to be able to place themselves in the geography of Dayton, to get to know the neighborhoods, to see how they intertwine, to see how, even though the neighborhoods, you know, have different makeups, they're all, there's a connectivity between them. The map, you click and you find locations, and over time, there'll be more and more stories available on the map. Julia and Steve actually created this interactive map with a group of programmers, collectively known as Ziga, from Boston. So Julia's better to talk about the interactive map, but let me say also that the interactive website is a really revolutionary kind of construct, especially in collaboration with a public radio station. This project was funded by the Association of Independents in Radio. And the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And the idea was to bring multimedia into public radio stations. So they paired producers with radio stations. And Julia and Steve happened to be filmmakers, so they brought their incredible experience as filmmakers into the radio station, teaching radio people visual skills and visual editing skills. So we have all of this material now that's also available through our website, wyso.org. So it's a little confusing, but we have at our website radio stories, short films that go with the radio stories, and access to this incredibly cutting-edge multimedia website that Steve and Julia have built. So the map, you're right, is the really innovative part of that project, and I'll let Julia tell you a little bit about how that came about.
Yeah, I could just sort of mention that is, you know, one of the themes or one of the goals that we had as filmmakers collaborating with a radio station, which, by the way, right away, I got to say, is so unusual. I mean, as documentary filmmakers, Steve and I are used to thinking of our audience, quote, as the whole nation or the whole world, right? We make long-form documentaries. And working with an interactive, if you think about it, we don't use the word audience for something on the web, right? We use the word user. It's an individual who sits in front of their computer and looks at your work, as opposed to a theater filled with people, a film festival filled with people, or even TV, where probably a few people at least are watching it together, and it's watched, you know, straight through in a theater or a film festival. Maybe on TV they've got that remote, they could turn it off, but you hope people stick with it if you're doing a good job. Online, you have a one-person user. They can click off, and they probably will after 1 minute if it doesn't grab them, or even 15 seconds. It's a whole different thing. So we really had to expand our kind of minds and experience from long-form documentarians to making something for the web. But let me get back to the map, because that is sort of the key component, and that will go live on April 9th. A theme that arose is that we have to think about Dayton as one city. We can't feel like we're divided east and west, or we're divided, you know, rich and poor, or we're divided. If we're gonna make it as a city, we have to pull together and view that we're one city. So the map, where you see all of Dayton in one beautiful hand-done map, was very, very important to us. And there are little dots all over the map which represent the stories that we have already provided. Some are about history, some are present-day stories, some are the radio stories. But here is the really cool part. People can upload their own story. And it's beautiful and very easy to do. I just tested it actually yesterday for the first time. And you can show your pictures. You have three acts. Act one, who was I? Act two, what happened? And act three, who am I now, or who am I trying to be now? And so you can upload your story, upload pictures, and that then appears on the map. Mm-hmm. So, and that'll be, I hope, like all over Dayton. So you can click on stories. You can say like, oh, I live in Belmont. Oh, look, there's a new story in Belmont. Let me see who that is. And maybe it's a neighbor, or maybe it's a business that just opened. So I'm very excited about that map going live, and I really hope that people in our town, you know, find it useful to understanding our city better. There's another aspect, if people do go to the website, there's another aspect I'll just mention briefly, which is the site prompts you to think about several sets of questions. What do you value in Dayton? What gives you faith that Dayton can change? What can you do? These are the three ACT questions. What can you do to make your block, your neighborhood, your city better? What can you contribute? And the questions go on a Twitter feed, and they also go on the website in kind of a beautiful cityscape frame, a film frame. So that's a way that people can, again, think collectively through the website about what they value and what they want to see changed.
Mm-hmm. It also takes you... shows you several quote-unquote signs of hope in Dayton, be it the blessing of the bikes or the downtown Dayton Revival Festival, things that really show Dayton is still alive and well. I want to get back into some of the really moving parts of the seven people featured in the documentary.
Sure.
I want to go back to Mitch. He's a man about 40 years old, worked at the same GM plant as LaToya until it closed in 2008. And then things really started to turn bad for Mitch after the plant closed. Let's hear a little more of his story from the film.
Bills wasn't getting paid, a mortgage company calling, how are we gonna eat? Started isolating myself. I would just stay in my room. I'd come out to eat and use the bathroom, and that was it. My wife wasn't working, and money was always an argument. It really added to a strain on my marriage as far as the financial situation. Now we're not anymore, you know. It happens, and I never thought it would happen, but had a house, car, family, lost everything, and now I'm starting back over.
And Mitch's story really jumped out to me just for the raw honesty about his failed marriage, his economic struggles. He went on to say in Act Two that he had spent some time living in an abandoned house. Julie Riker, right. Tell us how Mitch is doing.
You know, I'm so glad you played Mitch. I really like Mitch. And he is his story as a 40-some-year-old man who had a family, a wife, two adopted daughters, nice house, you know, really a life that he cherished, and it all, I mean, as you hear, it just fell through his fingers. And that happened to so many auto workers. They were so stunned by the loss of their future, what they thought was going to be their future. So Mitch did live in an abandoned building. What happened to Mitch? He has a job now. He works at Caterpillar. I don't think he'd mind me saying that he makes $11.50 an hour. He's fine with his job for now. He really found solace in a church that actually his sister is one of the pastors at. We visited the church. You'll see it in Act Three. And I think between his family, I think part of it was hitting rock bottom, honestly. It was just like, man, it can't get any worse. He began to drink. He lived in an abandoned building. He had no job. He pulled himself together. The church helped. His family helped. And he's a smart guy. I mean, he had ambitions. He actually went to community college for a while. He hopes to go back. I mean, he found his hope again. He kind of lost his hope, but he found it again. And that's one of the things we're so interested in talking with people, is a lot of people lost hope. Like, the city kind of lost hope, I feel. And I've lived here a long time. But then, like, people found it again. People found their faith, their hope. And how did they do that? What was the struggle? Where did the light come in? What was the turning point where that big ship that was going in a wrong direction sort of slowly started turning around? That was the real question that we all were driven by as we went out last summer. So Mitch now, again, has a job. He has a home. He sees his kids, and he goes to church. And he actually, it's wonderful. He plays keyboards in the church. It's a wonderful church. It's actually a church that's a music church, a singing church. It's fantastic to go to a service there. Mm-hmm. You'll see it in Act 3.
We're talking about Reinvention Stories. That's a multi-platform documentary project. Give us a call about Dayton, about your story of reinvention. Anything you're struggling with right now, something you've just overcome, give us a call. Share your story. 614-292-8513. Again, 614-292-8513. Another story in the film from Teresa, this fairly well-to-do woman who lives in the suburbs, but after fixing up her sick brother's home, she decides she wants to return to her roots to the South Park neighborhood to restore dilapidated houses, not to make money, but to improve the neighborhood. But she's met with some opposition from neighbors who hang up signs that she says read, "Rich people go home, we don't want you." And so that introduces this idea that maybe some people might not want to reinvent themselves, might not want to change. Is that something that either of you saw through this project?
You know, that's interesting. There were some people who I would say, you know, it's funny, there's a, I don't know what her quote's going to be, but Brenda, not that Brenda DeWittier doesn't have aspirations, but she's lived in Dayton her whole life, and her perspective is that Dayton sucks right now. She doesn't really feel the change. You know, I don't know if we have something from Brenda, but yes, there were people like Brenda who are a little more isolated, who, while there's a, for instance, in her neighborhood, there's a terrific neighborhood organization, right? She doesn't even realize, she vaguely knows it exists, but she doesn't participate. See, I think that's something important, is that you take that step to get outside of your house, to get outside of your own life, and join with other people. So I think there are people who, for whatever set of reasons, are not ready to reinvent or don't feel that hope yet. And I think it has a little bit to do with being isolated. Maybe, I don't know what her clip is, but let's hear it. Brenda?
I haven't really seen any improvement as far as upswing in Dayton. And I think people are being misled. I think Dayton sucks right now.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. She represents a certain voice. And we feel, this isn't like an upbeat, this isn't like a Chamber of Commerce view of Dayton. This is trying to be real. And, you know, Brenda's not the only one who feels that way.
I think it was mentioned in the opening, in the introduction, someone saying Dayton is not a good place to live right now.
Yeah. And of course, some neighborhoods still are dangerous, and some neighborhoods are definitely still going downhill. But the signs of life are definitely there also. And I think we felt we can learn from what's not working, and we can learn maybe even a little bit more from what's being turned around, what's coming back, and why.
Well, let's back up a little bit and help people who might live in Central Ohio get a better understanding of Dayton. Has many of the same Rust Belt struggles as other cities in this region, high unemployment, shrinking population. To either of you, Nina Ellis, we haven't heard from you in a while. What makes Dayton unique? What's so unique about your community?
Well, that's a great question, and I'm glad you asked it, Steve. I've only been here 4 years. I've spent the last 30 years on the East Coast. I'm a Midwesterner, but coming back to the Midwest and coming to Dayton. And what makes Dayton unique, I think, is the spirit that Julia is talking about of people saying, we got to do something about this. And we need to collaborate to get this done. As a radio station manager, I meet a lot of people who are heads of small companies, heads of nonprofits, heads of, you know, libraries, heads of museums. And in Dayton, there is a tangible, real sense of we Daytonians are going to rebuild a life here. It's going to be different. We don't exactly know what's going to be, but we're going to bring people back downtown. We're going to revitalize the Dayton Art Institute. We're going to, you know, invest in our parks. We're going to make life here good, and we're going to do it ourselves. And this, as I mentioned, this reaching out for collaboration among organizations and across boundaries, you know, that would otherwise be boundaries. I'm finding very incredibly powerful experience living here in Dayton, coming to Dayton as an outsider.
Julie, you know, I would say,
go ahead.
Yeah,
Julie.
I would just to sort of build on that. You know, we kind of lean on and draw from, I guess is what I mean, our heritage as a city of inventors. We all know that. This is a very yeasty place, let's say, historically and still. And we lean on our history of smart people who work with their hands. I mean, look at the Wright brothers. Look at Patterson and Kettering. These are people who rolled up their sleeves and did stuff. And they were smart, and they invented, and they changed the world. So we all know that that happened right here. And so we feel that. Something, and that kind of refreshes you when you feel a little down and, gee, nothing's going to change. You think, well, you know, look, we had the flood and we came back from that, or what? We had the Great Dayton Flood. But here's another thing that's happening is I think with the old guard, quote unquote, that I maybe referred to earlier, the sort of old heads of all the corporations that I know in my own memory used to definitely kind of run things in many ways, you know, heads of banks, heads of big corporations, a whole, like, younger group is becoming empowered at a young age with young children and a future to take over things. Like the Dayton Art Institute is a great example. There are lots of others that are organizations, neighborhood organizations, civic organizations, organizations around issues that are being, you know, headed up by people in their 30s, early 40s, people with energy and, you know, again, a future here because of their kids.
You know, right before I came here, Steve, there was Richard Florida came to Dayton and, you know, public speaker has this theory about the creative class. And his visit to Dayton, which at that time had been named one of the 10 fastest dying cities by Forbes magazine, that visit galvanized people, created a wave of activity, and spawned a number of different organizations that were created by many of them young people. Especially, I'm talking about an organization called Up Dayton, and Film Dayton was created by that. And help me, Julia.
There was one more which I forget, but those are specifically to galvanize the really large film community, both lovers and makers.
But these young people coming together saying,
yeah,
we want to paint overpasses. We want to fix community gardens. We're young, but let us do what we can do.
Sure.
Right.
So I think there was one mural that was featured in your Stories of Hope section on the website.
Yes.
It's a beautiful mural in a definitely fairly devastated neighborhood. But that mural is beautiful, and people walk by and feel pride because it's about the neighborhood.
Sure.
So it's a group of young people who are saying, we're going to stay here. We're going to make this happen. This is where we're going to raise our kids. And, you know, they're going to be sort of the cultural leaders of the next wave of Dayton.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm Steve Brown, and you're listening to All Sides here on 89.7 NPR News. We've been talking with Julia Reichert and Nina Ellis about Reinvention Stories, a documentary project that tells the stories of several Dayton residents reinventing themselves. We do have two callers holding on the line. Callers, please hold. Coming up after the break, we're going to talk with the city manager of Dayton about Welcome Dayton. That's an effort to replenish the city's population with immigrants. That's just ahead here on 89.7 NPR News. We're also streaming at WOSU.org/allsides.
Another Democrat plans to leave the Senate. New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg throws 12 of his millions into an ad war with the NRA. Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann faces an ethics probe and updates on special elections in South Carolina and Massachusetts. I'm Neil Conan. Political junkie Ken Rudin's back with his weekly roundup. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon from 2 to 4 on 89.7 NPR News. Stay right here in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, hour 2 of All Sides begins, and it's Wellness Wednesday. How smiling will make you smarter. Also learn some dangers of taking some medical studies too seriously. That's on Wellness Wednesday from 11 till noon. Mostly cloudy skies for today, a high of 43, about a 30% chance of rain. Partly cloudy tonight and a low of 29 degrees, clouds and a high of 46 on Thursday. Support for 89.7 comes from Home Instead Senior Care, providing non-medical home health care and companionship to seniors in Central Ohio for over 16 years. More at homeinstead.com or 1-800-4-SENIORS. Home Instead Senior Care. To us, it's personal. And All Sides continues. This is 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Steve Brown sitting in for Ann this week. This hour, we've been talking about reinventing Dayton. We've spoken with two of the key members of the team that produced the documentary project Reinvention Stories. You can find more about that at reinventionstories.org. Also on the line with us now is Dayton City Manager Tim Reardon to talk about Welcome Dayton. Tim, welcome to All Sides.
It's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much for coming on. I've heard Welcome Dayton basically described as an effort to replenish the population by making the city more immigrant-friendly. I know there are a lot of details of the plan, but is that basically the goal?
Yeah, that really is what we tried to do. Is we said we want it to be an immigrant-friendly city. I think really there's sort of three things that drive it. One is, hey, this is America. This is the right thing to do. This is the strength of our country. Second is what we found with the immigrants, it's an increasing population, and it's a source of growth. And I think the third thing is immigrants tend to be more entrepreneurial than native-born Americans, and we think that's something that we need to strengthen in our economy. So, I mean, it's got some really, there's just some really good features to it.
And there are a lot of other details to it, World Cup-style soccer tournament, plenty of other details. It's still early, but is it working? Is it helping revitalize the city?
I don't know that I can point to something that says, oh, yeah, there's a dramatic difference here. We've seen what we think are increasing numbers of immigrants coming here. We're seeing people, you know, that say they're texting their friends in back in their home countries or in other cities to say this is a good place. But I think this happens slowly. Mm-hmm. I can tell you a great story is that there's in the old North Dayton part of town, there's a number of Russian Turkish immigrants who are coming there. And talking to some of the hardware people, they'd say, you know, people would come in and they'd buy one window at a time to put that back in their house and to refurbish their house. And they came to these neighborhoods because they could buy a house cheaply, and they had great construction skills, and so they can do the repair themselves. So, I mean, it's cool anecdotal stories like that that are happening in terms of, can I say, hey, it's made a dramatic impact right off the bat? I'd say no, but I think when we started this, this isn't a a project. This isn't a one-time event. This is something that's a change of the culture, and it's something that's got to go on for years and years.
Mm-hmm. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Steve Brown filling in for Ann, and we're talking about the city of Dayton. We're joined by two producers of a new documentary project, Reinvention Stories. Also on the line, Dayton City Manager Tim Reardon. Join the discussion. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. That's 614-292-8513. And we do have a caller now from the previous segment. I think it's still pertinent to the topic, though. Rod from Columbus. Good morning, Rod. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. What I wanted to ask was, now, in the case of Dayton, they had NCR move out a few years ago. And I was wondering how major manufacturers are looking toward Dayton, if they're trying to attract any major manufacturers and or, you know, perhaps becoming a service city, you know, something like Columbus has. Like I said, I just wanted to know if they were attracting anybody. My other question was, Dayton has kind of taken, just wondering how Dayton views itself with respect to the other major cities in Ohio. I'm speaking specifically about the three C's, Cleveland, Columbus, and Cincinnati, and perhaps Indianapolis in Indiana, since Indiana's fairly close.
Tim Reardon there, has sure. Dayton made any progress toward attracting new corporations?
Well, let me, first of all, I just say the loss of NCR was a real hit. NCR was just so paramount to our community, and the fact of them leaving, I think, really created an emotional loss in the community. In terms of the question is, what's going to happen? I don't think we're going to recruit major manufacturers, but what I find when I go around and visit businesses, there are a lot of smaller manufacturers. Our manufacturing employment has been growing in the area. I mean, we took a real hit for a number of years, but it's coming back. And there's a lot of residual skills in the community, a lot of residual knowledge. And so it's coming back. It's slowly but surely. I don't think you're going to find some 3,000 job company is going to move into Dayton, but it's going to be smaller manufacturers that, you know, are more on the cutting edge that are going to keep growing. That's what I'm seeing when I go around and talk with companies.
You also, one of the recommendations from the Welcome Dayton plan was the focus on East 3rd Street as an initial international marketplace for immigrant entrepreneurship. As you say, immigrants tend to be a little more entrepreneurial than native-born Americans. How is that East 3rd Street initiative specifically? How is that going?
We've got a little bit going, but, you know, entrepreneurs are entrepreneurs, and so they're going to locate where they want to locate. And so we'd hope to create some focus, and we've got a few there on the East 3rd Street, but we've got people going in other directions. And the way I view it is, hey, that's the beauty of an entrepreneur. They say, hey, I find the right building at the right price, and that's where they're going. So we're starting to see a slow but sure growth in some immigrant entrepreneurs with some smaller businesses. You know, I think this kind of growth is going to take a while, but I like what I'm seeing.
Nina Ellis or Julia Reichert, I understand you're still on the line. You did not have any immigrants featured in the documentary, at least not that I saw. But immigrants have some of the most powerful reinvention stories out there. Can you share any of those with us?
We did have an immigrant story as part of our radio series. I should mention that.
And there's another one coming up, too.
That reinvention is both a radio series and the interactive documentary site. But, yes, we had a husband and wife who preferred that their full names not be used. They were Iraqi immigrants, and the wife was the one who was the more comfortable talking. And their lives were thrown into tremendous chaos. They moved from Iraq to Egypt, where they were really unable to get any traction, and finally came to the United States. At the time that we interviewed them, they were really struggling to, you know, get a foothold. But since then, the wife has, she went back to school, and she's teaching other immigrants English, as far as I know right now. So there was that story. There, as Julia mentioned, there's more coming.
I wanted to, and Tim may want to comment on this, but, you know, Welcome Dayton has only been around for about a year or so. It's, and it
a
really
over
is a,
year.
Pro- Yeah, a little over a year. So it really is just kind of a foot in the door. And I think it's a conceptual leap that maybe hasn't quite taken hold yet, but it takes a while for an idea like that to take hold. But I did want to mention one of our stories, and I feel really proud about it. At the end of Act Two, one of the little sort of moments of where you we talk about faith and hope, there's a church on in the Twin Towers neighborhood, which is a very, you know, difficult neighborhood, a lot of crime and so forth. But it's becoming increasingly, as it has, you know, over many decades, becoming now a little more immigrant, particularly Latino neighborhood. And the church, St. Mary's Church, which is on the historic, it's a historic landmark. The church's population, which had been based in German Catholics, Caucasians, obviously, was diminishing and diminishing, getting down to very little. So a couple of years ago, they started noticing that Latinos were coming to that church. So what they did was they started having a mass in Spanish every Sunday at 1 o'clock. And it's a big mass. There are hundreds of people who come. They have a sister there who speaks Spanish, who ministers to that population. In other words, they realized, you know, we need to change our focus here. You know, we traditionally have been a Caucasian church. It's not working. We're an urban church. Let's reach out to people who really are there. And it's really worked. And you'll see in the interactive, you'll see a beautiful moment of a baptism. You know, mm-hmm. the baptism of a Latino baby, a young family right there in the church, which to me signifies, you know, the faith and hope in the future of that neighborhood. You know, because of this historic church that sort of, you know, did a little reinvention.
Mm-hmm. Let's get another caller involved real quick if we can. Keith calling from Cleveland. Good morning, Keith.
Hi, how you doing?
Doing all right.
Glad to be on the show. Hey, I'd just like to say, I grew up in Ohio City. I also have a history with Dayton. I used to work with a dance company called Rhythm and Shoes. I worked with them for many years. I grew up in Ohio City, which was traditionally a very poor neighborhood. Suddenly in the 70s, a lot of rich folks started moving in, buying up houses cheap, fixing them up. And one thing they don't keep that they tend to forget, if I drove my old raggedy pickup truck out to Sagamore Hills, they'd be waiting for me at the border to chase me off. The haves do not want the have-nots around. So why in the world should the have-nots want the haves coming around, flaunting their wealth? Next thing you know, somebody wants to buy your house, here come the inspectors. They have economic power. They push people around, and that's why you get resistance.
Julia or Nina, we did see that in the documentary with Teresa, who said
Teresa,
a lot mm-hmm. of people didn't want her in their neighborhood. That gets back to it that some people just don't want change sometimes.
Well, you know, it's funny. I'm wearing my Rhythm and Shoes T-shirt right now, Mr. Caller. Great, fantastic group, really good buddies, friends at the station. You know, in the case of Teresa, it's an interesting example to drill down into, which we don't so much, well, we do a little bit in the story. She's from the neighborhood. She cared about the neighborhood. She was not like some sort of developer coming in who just saw an opportunity to make money. Her houses are, in this case, I mean, I think she understood what you were saying, and she did not want to be that person who came in and sort of just flipped houses and made money and made it so that all the working class people had to leave. They do very nice restorations, but they make a point of keeping the rents low. The sale prices are low. She actually doesn't make money. She feels it's like her charitable work. It's interesting that she views it that way. She and her partner in this view it as charities. They don't take city money, government money. They don't take any of that. They feel like, you know, she was blessed with wealth, is what she'll say. And she doesn't go into how she got it because it's because you know, she and her husband made an invention, actually, that they sold for a lot of money. So they have plenty to live on. So she said, her question was like, what can I do? What difference can I make now that I'm comfortable and actually wealthy? So she decided to put it into developing the housing, and she's improved the neighborhood. But the rents have not like super risen and the housing prices have slowly gone up, but that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Let's hear more from Tim Rudin. Tim, I do before the end of the show, I do want to touch on one point of the Welcome Dayton plan that did cause a little bit of controversy, not a lot, but some. The idea of giving city ID cards to people who were not able to obtain a driver's license. And some people were openly critical of that. They said they thought it was offering asylum to illegal immigrants, essentially. What did you think of the controversy over that? Was there anything to that?
Well, that was a lightning rod point, obviously. And what we did is we put together inside the, you know, we got this recommendation from the task force, put together a committee inside with made up of half immigrants and half other people. We looked at this, and frankly, to do an ID card, it just really wasn't practical. It wasn't going to work, and so we never went forward with that. It was, like I say, it was a lightning rod issue, but the state already has a pretty good card for those kinds of things, and the more research we did, it wasn't a practical idea.
We're talking. Hey, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Can I make one last point? You talked about the interesting story over at St. Mary's Church, and the point I wanted to make is that the city government in this case said we want to be an immigrant-friendly city, but the government can't make it that. It's what do the police do? What do the hospitals do? What does the schools do? The libraries, the courts. It really is a whole community that makes it immigrant friendly. What we've tried to do is provide the leadership and said, this is the direction we want to go. What can you do? We're just in the process of appointing a fairly large committee to carry on some of the work. And one of our charges to them is going to be, can your organization and can you convince other organizations to do one more thing? And the more we do that, the more the immigrants will communicate back to others in this country and in their country, hey, this is a pretty good place. They're doing this, this, and this, and that's really helpful to us.
I do want to close with Julia Reichert or Nina Ellis. Act 3 of the documentary is coming up April 9th. Can you give us any hints or help us with tell us what we might expect to see in Act 3?
Oh, I don't know if I should. I don't know if I should give it away. let's see.
Just
well,
about a
LaToya,
minute.
LaToya is not homeless anymore. LaToya's not homeless anymore.
Well, the stories are going to end.
Are going to end. Sure. They're going to resolve. Yeah.
Well, all the stories resolve. You know, we said we had this three-act structure.
Right.
Who was I? What happened? And where? What am I becoming now? So all the stories will resolve. We'll learn about what people's paths are going
to
be.
We'll have to log on.
And they're different.
We'll have to log on
different.
To find out. Julia Reichert, Nina Ellis, and Tim Rudin, thank you all so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Steve Brown, and you're listening here on 89.7 NPR News. We're also streaming on the web at wosu.org/allsides.